episode of the Double Comma Club with your host, Nicole Ruth of the Ruth Team, the number one lending team in Colorado.
I've been talking about some topics lately around where's the money coming from? All of these over asking prices. When is it going to slow down? What's it going to take to make it slow down? Because we're not going to get the inventory we so desperately need. Regretfully, builders can't keep up. And with the increased cost of steel and lumber and experienced labor, they're just not able to keep up or provide the kind of supply that's going to make a difference in the market. And so people turn to foreclosures. Will that provide inventory? And no, that won't either. The numbers keep showing that the foreclosures just aren't there. I mean, there's some opportunity for foreclosures, and the fact that I said opportunity and foreclosures in the same sentence, but there's some indication that some people will have that, especially FHA and VA loans where they don't have any money down or any equity in the home. But even those numbers are dwindling. So I'm going to show you what those numbers are dwindling to, what we might see as the turnabout for the demand, which is going to allow the supply and demand equilibrium start to rebalance. Now, it's not going to happen overnight, and it might not even be back to what it was immediately, but what our normal is isn't going to go back to what it was either. These new normals, new definitions, but, and you have to also remember too, Denver isn't really a balanced market, never really has been. It's a seller's market. It's just a matter of how extreme of a seller's market is it? And right now, along with a lot of the rest of the country, it's a very extreme seller's market. So even pulling that back to slightly less so, balanced, forget about it. Let's not even think about that. How do we just make it a little less extreme so that there's maybe 10 offers and $10,000 over, not 25 offers and $150,000 over or worse. And you've seen that. So here's the quote that kind of impacted me today. Right? So courage doesn't always roar. Sometimes courage is the quiet voice at the end of the day saying, I will try again tomorrow, right? I'm going to get up and I'm going to try again tomorrow. And I loved this quote because some days you just feel so beaten down, but I actually love this quote right now from the perspective of the first time homebuyer. It just really struck out at me because I know we've been working through trying to get those first-time homebuyers under contract, especially the first-time homebuyers who are FHA or down payment assistance or minimum down or don't have the money to do the appraisal gaps or put in over asking. So we're all trying to get creative, right? We're all trying to go, okay, well, maybe we drop down in price point so we have some ability to lift up the offer price. Or maybe we look outside of our favorite areas and go to maybe a slightly off area that might have some more opportunities. Or can we get a gift from somebody, or can we move them from FHA or VA to conventional? I mean, we're having these conversations constantly. And at the same time, there's a lot working against the first-time homebuyer. I shared on the market updates in the last couple of weeks, some of the changes that they did. We all know now about the 7% limitation to the number of loans sold to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which are second homes investments, right? That's kind of come and gone. That's a new cycle. The next one that's coming up before July, it has to happen per the preferred stock plan with Fannie and Freddie. Is this change that's going to directly affect first-time homebuyers? And it's that change that says if you fit into two of the three guidelines of, is your debt-to-income ratio over 45%? Do you have less than 10% down? Or is your credit score less than 680? And if two of those three things are true, then Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are limiting the purchase of that bucket of loans to 6% of all of the loans that they're purchasing. So that's going to limit the number of first-time homebuyers we can get in, and or really it's going to limit it through increased interest rates, right? So now all of a sudden more people are going to be going to FHA because that's where the better interest rate is, or that's where really automated underwriting is already starting to strip some of those buyers out. Where if you talk to any lender, we're already having a harder time getting some of those borrowers, approved through the automated underwriting system for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And we need to do that because they'll start limiting the manual underwrites on those. Meanwhile, on the other side of the fence, right, the jumbo market is actually opening up. It's becoming more of the favored child. where we have 10% jumbo loans. We have 95% first and second loans where you can buy a jumbo. Our credit score just went down from a 700 all the way down to 620, although those interest rates would be awful, but you can do it, right? And now we can do investment jumbos. And all these things are opening up rapidly as the risks have all been assessed and people are back to work and people can pay back loans. And it's determined that we can offer those loans again. But those poor first-time homebuyers, when I read this quote, that is all I thought about. It affects us all to get up again and put our feet on the ground and trudge into whatever it is that we're facing. But the first-time homebuyers really need every little bit that we can help them with. So let's jump into what's going on in the market. Of course, is an update. Let's talk about what's being said in the news, right? Because the market, what is going on specifically in the market? The economy is getting stronger, right? Inflation just came out higher. We expected that, right? Interest rates took a little dip. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But I really want to talk about two articles that came out this week that are affecting, or I should say making, our buyers and our sellers maybe question, right? Like, is it becoming unaffordable? At what point does that tip over? So this article was written talking about the affordability crisis, and it actually pinned out Denver, Colorado. Denver, Colorado was in the top four of unaffordable, right? Tipping towards unaffordable with the rise in the sales prices, in the rising of the interest rates that we were feeling. As a comparison to the longer average numbers, we were starting to see an extreme. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, right? But as this is getting broadcasted, how real is this? So CNBC actually spent a lot of time 2 days ago talking about the risk of affordability, especially as interest rates are going up. Inflation just came out, and that's why they started talking about it. So as they're sharing that the inflation was so much higher and all the prices are going up and the interest rates are going to start going up, they didn't really think about the fact that we were just comparing it to last year. And we've talked about this a lot. We were expecting the inflation number to go up because year over year, I'm comparing it to down months. And then I also have those, like last year, April, our core inflation was negative 0.4%. So as I compare it, even a positive 0.3 seems like an extreme. But then also next month, as that negative 0.4 rolls off, my 12-month average also goes up because I don't have that anchor at the back end. So both of those things, we're expecting not only inflation to go up this month, we're expecting it to go up again next month. And it's somewhat expected. It is expected, 100% expected. We actually saw the interest rates didn't go up because of it. In fact, they went down slightly. And a lot of that had to do with Johnson & Johnson, right? Because that came out the exact same morning as the heightened inflation. So when Johnson & Johnson came out, they had said that, we all know, the FDA put Johnson & Johnson on hold. And because of that, the rolling out of the economy and getting out all of the vaccines did a little number on the markets, and it actually backed our interest rates down. And you hate to do that on the back of bad news, but it is what it is. And people were afraid that the herd immunity might be delayed. Ultimately, it's not going to be. I know that everybody swept in, and any Johnson & Johnson vaccines that were scheduled were just swapped out for the other two options. But this is something that affects our secondary markets and our 10-year treasury. Our 10-year treasury broke below 1.6. Great news, kept our rates down a little bit. This is not an expected long-term trend. This is one of those things that how many people are under contract right now? Can we lock folks in before it starts turning back upwards? But the bottom line is that inflation conversation led to an affordability conversation, right? And they're not talking about all the pieces to the puzzle. And this is where we step in. This is where we have to be in front of our clients talking about the fact that I get that you're reading these articles, but this isn't the only thing that's going on. You have to also think about not just the interest rate, not just the sales prices, but you also need to think about wages. And in fact, this is something that I was looking at. If I see a 10% increase in prices, and that is actually our appreciation that we are seeing right now, the Denver market. When I look at like DMARS reports or any 11 county or 7 county reports, and I look at median or average price growth, that's going to be higher, double digits. But if I look at a 10% price appreciation year over year, and I take a $600,000 home and I'm putting 10% down as a buyer, right? That home price, monthly budget. So my home price went up $235 a month. My P&I did. But if I take 5% wage growth, which is what Colorado's seeing over 5% annualized average weekly wage growth. So when we are seeing over five, it's around 5.5, that 5% on a $65,000 salary is an additional $270 a month. So they're actually riding together. We're not stretching this unaffordability. And remember, typically, not always, you have two wage earners in a home affording that monthly payment. So it's a conversation that's going to need to be had. I am not dismissing that conversation. I'm saying it's not yet. We're not there yet. Right now, we're seeing a lot of people coming into the market. And who is coming into the market and how is that affecting? So this is a very interesting conversation. And I really want to make sure that you're having this because the dynamics aren't just about, is it affordable based on my monthly payment going up? The dynamics are also around who's buying these homes. So this is something, an article that just came out showing Coinbase, which just went public yesterday, if you guys were watching that, right? And so Coinbase just went public. But you could buy shares of it, Series A and Series B and Series C. And so the value of those is kind of by year. So if I just look at even last year, it was $28 a share. It is going now for $381 when it went live on the NASDAQ yesterday. So it went from $28 last year to $381 a share yesterday. So my son, we all got the stimulus. Well, we didn't all get the stimulus checks, but a lot of people got their stimulus checks. My three kids were three of them. They've had jobs and been on their own taxes for a while now. And so my three kids each got a check. My 23-year-old son was talking to one of his best friends who was trying to nudge him to buy Bitcoin a year ago. He didn't do it. I didn't do it either. Because he said, Mom, you got to do this because they're talking about it. I'm like, no, I don't believe in this. So a year ago, he put $10,000 in Bitcoin. That kid now has $200,000. And he's not alone, right? Because we're all talking about Robinhood, right? We're all talking about Reddit. We know that he's not alone because you have all these kids who had been before. We would have said that they were gigging it, right? Maybe they didn't have that steady job. Maybe they weren't able to afford those homes. Well, one of the things that they were doing during COVID was checking out this opportunity that they've been presented, right? And they were putting a little bit of money in there. And if the millennials are putting money in there, now all of a sudden they have something that really doesn't have value the same way I might look at $200,000 that I scrimped and saved over the course of maybe 5-10 years, depending on my station in life, and put that away for something big, whether it was my retirement or the down payment on a home or what have you. But that kid who's 23, and I have a number of millennials in my office even, and some of them are saying, hey, I've done pretty well in the stock market or in Bitcoin this last year. I listen to what you say. I'm totally bought in the powers in real estate and the opportunity. I'd like to take some of that money and I'd like to put it into real estate. And not only am I super excited about having that conversation, my jaw drops when I realize there's opportunity here if we stop thinking and about them as gig workers. We have to have conversations to go, how have you done in the stock market? Have you invested in Bitcoin? What would it look like if we took some of that and put it into something that's secure and stable? And you know that I can set up a retirement plan for you where maybe you have $10,000 or $20,000 a month in income called rental income when you retire. What if you just did that and then you were able to do other things right now and not take that job that you really didn't want, but paid well?
And that's a good place for a break. We'll be back in just a minute.
Your home purchase has a long-term impact on your ability to build financial wealth. We at The Ruth Team will continue to be alongside you well beyond the closing date. Whether helping to refinance a loan, transitioning to your next home, or building multi-generational wealth through investments, we are committed to finding you solutions other lenders can't or simply won't. We look forward to helping you build wealth through real estate by generating passive income for a more financially secure future. Get started today by visiting theroofteam.com. That's T-H-E-R-O-O-F-T-E-A-M RUETHteam.com, your resource for helping you build wealth through real estate.
And let's continue the conversation.
Right, because you knew your retirement was being taken care of. I mean, these are the conversations. It's different than just, is it affordable or is it not affordable? Maybe it's getting less affordable, right? But maybe that doesn't matter as much because I've changed the conversation. Interestingly enough, Smart Asset just came out with their 21 version of their report. They do it every year. They just came out with their 2021 version at the end of last month, beginning of this month. States where millennials are moving, Colorado is number two. So this is really a conversation that we can be having, should be having, right? So Colorado saw the second biggest net gain of millennials, but also had the biggest percentage increase of 2.21% year over year. Colorado's millennials make up 23% of our population. We're the number one dense population of millennials. So as we look at that, and we break this down to the city, Denver ranks number one of all the cities across the United States. So millennials are moving out of New York City, Chicago, LA, San Diego, Boston, Miami, and they're coming to Denver and Colorado Springs. That's where they're coming in from. So Denver claimed the number one spot on the biggest net migration of millennials. And then Colorado Springs is number five, right? In Denver alone, so not Colorado, in Denver alone, millennials make up 32% of our population. In Colorado Springs, millennials make up 23% of their population. This is a big bandwidth. This is a big movement, right? And these guys, not all of them, but a number of them, have opportunity to put $50,000, $100,000, $150,000, or $200,000 dollars down on a home and not get a gift from mom and dad, right? So are we opening up that conversation? Are we asking them? And I don't need you to get knee deep in their financials. I'll do that. So just send them to me. I'll ask them all kinds of personal questions and have no problem with it, right? But this is the opportunity to open up the door for more conversations, bring in more clients. Not like we need more demand, but we do want to have those conversations to continue because the supply is going to start to balance out. It will not stay and cannot stay this extreme forever. We already know that. And we'll start to see that this summer and mostly in the fall. So the other headline that I wanted to highlight was, when is the housing market going to crash? So really interesting statistic on this one on the Google. So last week, Google reported that that question in their search bar went up. It spiked 2,450%. That's like not a little, is all I just kept thinking when I read that article. I was like, that is not even near a little. That is a huge concern for a lot of people. This is not just, because I've had countless conversations with my partners, my real estate partners, my lending partners, whoever, talking about, well, it's not going to crash. Everybody knows it's not going to crash. Clearly not everybody knows it's not going to crash. So can you write up a blog? Can you do a video for your database? Can you put together a little piece and email it or mail it out? Can you let people know that they're good? Like getting into the real estate market right now, or maybe buying up or whatever that, or diversifying and buying investment or buying a second home. Now is the right time to do that because it's not going to burst. It's going to slow down, but we're not going to burst. And there's reasons why. So when we saw that, the second Google search that did a huge jump is, how much over asking should I offer on a home in 2021? That search went up 350%, which isn't quite as big, but dang, it's pretty big, right? So to have that Google search also going up, so that's what's on people's minds. How long can this go on? How high can the prices go, right? That's what they're thinking about. When will this end? Am I paying too much? For all those people that didn't make the $200,000 in the Bitcoin, we're looking at really hard-earned money that's sitting in savings. It's hard to offer $50,000 over or $100,000 over if you don't understand that the market's not going to retreat. It's simply going to slow down. So let's look at a couple of those numbers that are kind of freaking them out, because that this is something that's going out in the news cycle, right? When you're seeing something like 12.3% on the closed median price, DMAR put this out, you know, last month it was like 17%, 15% increase in the average. Now that's just a what I'm taking this 1 month and I'm looking at this 1 month last year. So it's just a spot check, right? So I'm doing a month over month and a year over year. What I really like in the DMAR report that comes out every month is the year to date. It takes out the ebbs and flows. So it's where are we at this point in the year, right? And of course, as the longer the year goes, the more tight that number gets to being what the annual number will be, right? But what is my year to date? So if I had a slow January and February started ramping up and March started ramping up, I'm seeing where is this number sitting now compared to other years at this point in the year, right? And now that's, we're looking at 11%, which is much more in line with what CoreLogic is saying the Denver market is seeing. And interestingly enough, our closed is almost smack on par with where it was last year. We're gonna have another good sales year, even though we don't have any inventory. We're down 66%. CoreLogic says the Denver Metro has actually appreciated. And remember, they look at the individual houses and every time that house is sold, it's a data aggregation and they take all those homes and they are able to look at neighborhoods and counties and cities and states and the country. And they're saying that Denver is appreciating year over year based on all the sales at 10%, which is extremely healthy, right? I mean, I'd love it to be 6%, but it's not the 15 or 17% in real appreciation because those medians and those averages are all based on what's selling that month. So these are the conversations. Okay, so how out of control or how out of the market are we? Well, let's talk about that. And then let's look at your wage increases and let's look at the opportunities that maybe you did in Bitcoin, or let's look at what you can expect as far as your wage increases in the next year. Where are you going to land? I have several people right now in my pipeline are moving due to schools. Schools are going to become an important part of the decision going forward because in the fall, we're expecting those kids to be back in school. Some companies are calling their employees back to work full-time in the office. So some of those people are either going to go move back to where they were, or they're going to be looking for a new job. So we're going to have a lot more shifting going on this summer and this fall as we kind of unpack this. But in the meantime, all that growth is giving us the benefit of stability and security because the loan to value is going down. So a report came out earlier this week on Wall Street Journal talking about the average loan to value right now is 32%, which the opposite of that means that the average amount of equity is 68%. Now, of course, included in that is all the homes that don't even have a loan on them. If I compare this to 2008, the last time we did have a bubble, the average loan to value was 63%. Opposite, 100% opposite, with only 37% equity. And remember what we were dealing with back then. I mean, we had elevated appreciation values, right? We had appraisers who were talking to lenders, who were talking to real estate agents. And I'm not going to go down that rabbit trail of how overvalued were those appraisals. But let's just say that there were appraisals, I'm sure, that came in overvalued. So not only were those appraisals stated as overvalued because of all the relationships going on in that transaction, but then they got a loan for 125%, because why not? I mean, I just don't even understand that based on a stated income package, right? So if you had the NINAs and the stated income packages on an option arm, no less, right? So where you could pick a pay. So you've got this massively risky borrower who's buying multiple homes at the same time at 100 to 125% loan to value based on a value that might be exposed. With the average loan to value at that point, 63%, which means less people own their homes free and clear as well. So that is a significant difference between now and any kind of bubble. And with the inventory that we've got right now, I mean, a fraction of what they had in 2008, it simply isn't possible. I mean, they had 26,000 homes. Denver market did. The 11 counties in DMAR had 26,000 homes active in 2008. In this month, that many years ago, right? We had less than 2,000 this month. You can't have a bubble burst if you have no inventory, and we just simply don't have the foreclosures. So I want to share that as well. And I shared this, if you were at one of the market trends presentations that we did a week ago, I showed this. So I'm going to fly through this really quickly, but it's super important that you have this. And we'll put these slides in our Facebook Agent Ignite group. Our Facebook group is still very active. It doesn't have any of my posts in it, but it's very active and we'll post today's session in there as well as this slide deck. But the average equity per homeowner nationwide was extremely strong, 26,300. In the state of Colorado, 32,000 equity growth year over year is what this is, right? So where am I today versus where was I a year ago? Gained 32,000. The big number on this one is the average Coloradoan has $254,000 in equity. So I'm just going to ask a question. What could you do with $254,000? I'm going to that's a question you should ask your entire database. What could you do with $254,000? And see who doesn't answer that question, right? Because they don't know. They don't know what the appreciation has been doing and how much equity they've been building. Forbearances are declining. In fact, they've hit another low, which is fantastic. The FHA and the VA, the Ginnie Mae loans continue to fall off and more rapidly every single month. Love this, right? People are, they're either recasting, they're deferring that payment to the end, they're getting on a payment plan, or they are selling. And the majority of people have over 10% equity in their home that they're able to sell the traditional way. So this is an extremely healthy market. So 4%, it's actually less than 4% based on the coloring. It's about 3.6% of Coloradoans are still in forbearance. Very, very low. Only 2.5% of Coloradoans have less than 10% equity in their home today. And that was probably just the zero down borrowers in the last 6 months is all I can think of. It's the only people in the entire state who would have less than 10% today. So only 2.5%. So if I take that 3.6% are in forbearance and only 2.5% have less than 10% equity, the number that you have is under 1,000 households that are actually at risk here in Colorado, which isn't even going to make a dent on our inventory if it all became active inventory this month. It's just not even going to make a dent. It would make some buyers extremely happy, but it wouldn't make a dent on our overall health of our supply and our demand. Denver continues to be low. A couple months ago, I read a report where we were the fourth from the bottom on all of our defaults. Our delinquency numbers, our foreclosure rate numbers, our delinquencies are all extremely low. If not the bottom, they're the second to the bottom. We have a very healthy housing market here in Colorado. So to pay $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 over is a lot of money, right? But you're not going to lose that money. You just have to grow into it. It's like the jeans that your parents made you buy when you were a kid. They were always big because you had to grow into them. That's what we did. I'm from New York. We bought all of our Levi's a size too big every time. I don't think I bought a pair of jeans that actually fit me until I was 14. Maybe that was just my mom. But that was definitely a New York thing. Everybody had their Levi's. So when is this appreciation speed train going to slow down and what's going to make it slow down? So that's what I want to talk about really quickly. Two things are going to make this slow down. One is herd immunity. And we're already headed there, right? So this chart actually showed that Colorado, 22.44% of us have already gotten both shots. Really great news. So we're heading there. Some people will say you don't hit herd immunity until you get to 75%. Other people will say you start to get there 25%. There are different studies, and that's what I'm not getting into. But just even to see that 22% of us already have our second shot, we're moving into this herd immunity ability, right? That's going to be the first thing that's going to slow down this demand, right? You still have all these millennials and this generational movement. I mean, I've talked about this and I just love the statistic that the birth rate doesn't start slowing down until after the kids who are turning 13 this year. So we have two decades of buyers coming into the market. But when you have herd immunity, you're going to be able to go back out again and do other things other than fixate on why your home isn't the right home or what kind of home you need to buy or sell, right? We're going to start turning towards cruises and trips and concerts and going out to eat and all the other things that people enjoy doing, getting out of the house, which is going to slow down the demand slightly because I've kind of given up on the supply, right? I do know that as people start to get herd immunity, more people will feel like they can sell and go move and people can come in their homes safe and not be worried about somebody coming into their home with COVID, right? So there's some of that as well. But if we can just get the demand to temper slowly, then we'll have more of an appropriate amount of supply. So 22.4, we just got great news in the direction of herd immunity. Our job numbers came out just this morning, and our initial claims for unemployment went down to below 600,000. They have not hit this low since prior to COVID. This is great news. Because remember, we talked about the fact that, what are we in April? March, when we talked about the unemployment number, we had 1 million new jobs start just under, like it was 973,000. I'm kind of making that number up, but it's really close to that, right? In March, jobs that were formed. So we were talking about the fact that if we get 1 million new jobs every month, this is going to put us on a very strong track back towards full employment, right? Or at least normal unemployment, right? Versus our COVID unemployment. So to see this number drop down below 600, this is a big deal. And that just happened this morning. Retail sales also came out this morning. Love that jump right there. You know what that is? That's a stimulus package. That's a $1,400, right? They're going to work for you. The biggest jump, clothing. All those people talking about getting back out, herd immunity. I can start traveling again. I can go back to work again, whatever those things are. I can go back out to eat again. I need clothes to do that. I need new clothes for a new me, you know, whatever that is. Biggest jump, clothing, had to share. But this completely, this is right after the first stimulus check came out, right? And then here's the stimulus check that came out in December. This is January numbers. And then here's the stimulus check that just came out. Now, some people were delayed in receiving their $1,400 stimulus checks. So we're expecting that retail sales will be strong again next month. So people are going out and they're spending some of that money. So this is really, really good news. It's just all the other indicators that we've been talking about that are coming back. The confidence level is coming back. Manufacturing numbers just came out strong again. Builder confidence just came out this morning. It's also up, even with the cost of lumber being high. All of these are in the right direction that we're ready to explode and have a strong economy as if this didn't happen. I mean, this is pent up demand. Americans love to spend and we love to go out and we love to travel and we like to eat and we like to go to bars, and we've been pent up for too long. The economy is about to explode. In the meantime, interest rates did do that nice little dip. This would be the conversation to have with your buyers. Have you talked to your lender lately? I heard interest rates did a little dip. Let's see if we can get you into that home this weekend, right? I just locked somebody this morning at 2.99, no cost. I love that. So when I am seeing these numbers coming back, even if it's just for a minute, because don't hang on to this and think, okay, we're going back down again, because we are not, but take it when we can, because long-term, the interest rates, we're expecting 4% next year, 5% in 2024. It's the general trend. We know that as the economy opens up, the Federal Reserve will start pulling back on purchasing mortgage-backed securities, and we'll see interest rates going up. But if we can take advantage of this, but those rising interest rates, what we saw right here, we saw interest rates coming up off the bottom of 2.65 and taking a little dip. Nice, love it. But that trend is going to continue. That trend is the second factor in the slowdown for demand. In 2000 and I want to say eight, in 2013, 2013, sorry, I had to think about that for a second. In 2013, interest rates jumped up when the Fed started tapering. Interest rates went from 3.3 to 4.5. Mortgage purchase applications dropped 20%. So the interest rates will make a difference, right? They'll calm some of that demand. It's not going to knock it out, but we'll start having conversations around affordability. People will still be able to get in. Remember, we have a K-shaped recession. For those who have had more and now they've done extremely well in the stock market and they can still put money down and they can still afford those homes. But it will be a conversation, and some of that, maybe that whimsical buying will slow down. Maybe I needed that second home, but not really needed that second home. Maybe I'm going to rethink that second home. That's a conversation, right? So mortgage purchase applications did slow down, but this is before the interest rate. So this is a week delay. So we saw a slight slowdown in mortgage purchase applications, 1%. Right? It went down 1% week over week. Now it still looked high compared to year over year, but remember we were in lockdown a year ago. So that, I'm not taking that number into account at all, but it did slow 1%. Refinances slowed way down as the interest rates were going up, but the purchases went down 1%. Moody's also came out and slightly adjusted their numbers for what they expect this year. So they were expecting that in February, they had the home sales for 2021 and 2022 coming out strong. In fact, stronger than they were in 2020. They have revised that slightly lower based on a lack of inventory, based on interest rates going up, based on maybe some pullback in demand. So they are revising that. So we'll just continue to watch this, but it's still right in line. I mean, here's our 2020. And so we're kind of staying right in line. Instead of getting stronger, they're thinking it's going to flatten out. They're also thinking that this is the Zillow Home Value Index is going to start going down faster, right? They had it first kind of slowly, like staying up at these double digits and then slowly coming back down to 10% year over year price gain. And now that price gain, they're saying we're going to lose that a little bit faster if these interest rates continue to go up. Because this little temporary dip, don't hang on to that. Take advantage of it, but don't hang on to it. Ms. Cara, do we have any questions that we want to discuss before Bruce takes off?
Yeah, I've got one question from Peggy. She asks, if they recast the loan, are you seeing potential for foreclosure due to the payment increase for people? Or would it only affect the 2.5% that you mentioned previously that have less than 10% equity?
Recasting means if I have a bucket of money that I can put in the loan, and then I can actually pay down the principal, recast so I can reset a new monthly payment for that lower loan balance. What they're doing for the folks that are in forbearance is they're doing a loan modification. So they're actually dropping the interest rate. In the recast, you don't drop the interest rate. They're dropping the interest rate and providing a lower monthly payment. Either way, the payment's going down, not up. Now, you do have one of the options. You could either do a deferment, which it goes all the way out to the end, or you could do a payment plan. And that's probably what you're asking about. If you do set up a payment plan, you can take the amount that you didn't pay during the forbearance and you can divide it by, and they increased it from 12 months to like 30 months. And so it kind of spread it out. Most people went with the deferment. Very few people went with the payment plan. But if you did do the payment plan and then you got yourself in trouble again, or you lost your job and you couldn't make that increased payment, that's an issue. Then you would default back into the fact that only 2.5% of all Coloradoan households have less than 10% equity. So you would just sell your home.
You've been listening to The Double Comma Club. Never miss an episode. Subscribe at thedoublecommaclub.com. or your favorite podcast venue to hear more success stories, get free tips on how you can get on the path to becoming a millionaire through real estate at any age. If you enjoyed this, you might also enjoy our YouTube channel. Just look for The Roof Team on YouTube or visit our site, theroofteam.com.